If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to week 11 of Solo Ship. I'm Squirrel Patrol, joined as always by Jam DeLynn. Jam, we're recording a day early this week. In part, I got to go to Miami for King of the Beach tomorrow. So got to fly out like when we normally record. I made the hot take call last week that Joshua Dobbs would have like an excellent game. And it was like one of my best hot take calls of the season. And it looked like it was going to be a bonanza for me. And then Dak Prescott had to ruin all of my Tony Pollard, like Joshua Dobbs teams, just in like one swoop. I just kept throwing touchdown passes, you know, came the highest scoring quarterback. Tony Pollard did nothing. How was your week 11 or week 10?
Well, my week 10 was it was brutal. And on the DFS side, it was just barely below break even between pick'ems and DFS. And it was funny because we were talking about this on the DFS lab show this morning, but yeah, same thing for me, right? Like I had a little bit of Dak, but it was primarily Purdy and Howell, and Purdy puts up whatever he put up 25, and Howell put up his typical 29 points at sub 6K. Actually ended up on some Dobbs, I think like 6% or 8% Dobbs rosters paired with Hawkinson. And then, you know, Dak goes out and puts up 41 or 42. And same thing the week before where Dak was my highest owned quarterback. And it was Dak paired with CeeDee Lamb, and CeeDee Lamb was my highest owned wide receiver. So that helped a little bit more. But like, you know, Dak was my highest owned quarterback. He put up the 31 or 32. And then Stroud put up 46. So, and I was talking, we were talking about that on DFS Lab this morning because I don't, you know, we always have to be aware of that. I don't think this is a week where there's going to be one of these 40 pointers because we were talking about on the show, we were talking about like Sam Howell and Brock Purdy and kind of these 6.3K and below quarterbacks who can get you 25 to 30. And then it was like, of course, if somebody goes for 40, then, you know, you're still screwed because you're so far behind those rosters. But yeah, interesting couple of weeks where we've had these like just monster quarterback score from one guy, both times, not a guy who's super high priced either. So yeah, pretty unique last couple of weeks for sure.
Yeah. So this week we've got 11 game slate and it's a little bit better than some of the previous weeks where, you know, there hasn't been a high point total to be found. You know, we have a couple of the teams that have been off the main slate are back on it. Something that I got noticing this week in particular, but it's kind of been happening all season, is like this increasing divergence of the offenses. So I think we've got 8 teams out of the 22 that have like an implied point total of 17 or less. That's the highest number I can remember. We've got two in the same game, I think, with Cleveland and Pittsburgh. And then we have Dallas, Detroit, Houston, Miami, and San Francisco, all with implied point totals of 26 or more. I mean, that's like a 9-point difference. But, you know, obviously like those teams are in different games, but we're really seeing like this divergence where it seems like there's some offenses that are so high powered it almost like doesn't matter the matchup. And then some of the other offenses, it also doesn't matter the matchup. Like they are just going, you know, to they're going to score their 12, 15 points.
Right.
You know, and it's almost hard to find any kind of value. And sometimes that value does seem to like crop up from those teams, but it's almost like fool's gold, right? Like it, like the touchdowns may just not be there. What are your initial thoughts on the week?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good shout on this. And I think one of the things that really stands out to me on this slate, you know, last week we had Texans and Bengals, good defenses, but it's like, you know, these offenses are capable of pushing each other. We had the Chargers and the Lions, those offenses were capable of pushing each other. This week, it's all kind of big spreads for these teams. So the shape is a little bit different in terms of, and again, not to say that these teams can't get there on the way up. 49ers, you know, since Brock Purdy has taken over, have a, you know, a pretty deep history of being viable to stack with no bring back. In fact, more often than not, I was kind of digging into that last week, but it's like 60% of the time, the best way to play 49er stacks has been no bring back because they can just smash teams and put up a bunch of points, pretty concentrated offense. But, you know, a team like the Lions, you'd love to see them in a game where the opponent's going to score points against their defense. And what's cool about the Lions is like the Lions are a good defense because they're disciplined and they follow all their rules. They don't make mistakes, but they're not like this scary, super talented defense. And so we've seen, you know, Geno put up a big game against them. And who else? There's been three quarterbacks that have put up a big game against them, but they're like all elite quarterbacks. It was Geno and Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert, right? And so does Justin Fields fall into that category? Probably not. So yeah, it's one of these spots where the game environments don't necessarily match up all that well. And then also kind of the tilts of some of these matchups to where, you know, very quietly, the Bears are the worst team in football to run against, the lowest EPA per play on the ground allowed. So it's like, and teams lean into that. Teams have been passing at a pretty high rate against the Bears, but we know that the Lions would prefer to lean on their ground game. And, you know, if they take control of this one, they probably still do that a little bit, even if you know, the matchup doesn't lean that way. Chargers, right? Like, Chargers don't have a bad matchup against the Packers through the air, but teams just relentlessly run the ball against the Packers. So yeah, it's kind of a weird week where things don't line up in like a very clear way for the strengths of these teams or for the way that you would like these games to shape up. So definitely like separation between the best spots and the other spots, but not like just massive standout separation, if that makes sense, kind of how I'm seeing it.
Yeah, it's interesting. You started with like, you know, Chicago and Detroit because Justin Fields is back, and you know, we saw Kyler Murray come back and look pretty good in his debut last week. And you know, Justin Fields returning from injury. I love my rushing quarterbacks, especially on FanDuel, where you know those rushing touchdowns and rushing yards are you know, count a little bit more relative with only a half point per reception. Right, the scores tend to be lower. So like if a quarterback's getting rushing yards, even though it's the same points on FanDuel and DraftKings, they kind of count more on
yeah, like
FanDuel.
All the other players are scoring fewer points and those guys are scoring more points. Yeah, yeah.
It took me years to realize that. Like, wow, why do these, like, you know, why do these rushing quarterbacks always pop for me on FanDuel? And it is. It's like, yeah, those points count more and you don't have as much opportunity to drop down in the salary list, right? Like, the prices tend to stop at around 6,000 instead of going down to, like, God, we have like multiple quarterbacks below 5,000 this week.
I mean, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, speaking of running quarterbacks, 4,500 this week. So, yeah, you can get all the way down there.
You can. And I think Tommy DeVito is facing a Commander's pass defense. I actually made a joke about playing him at King of the Beach, right? Like, because I was saying, you know, there might be weeks where he's useful and probably against the Commanders with the NFC East. and my co-host Eric was like, you know, they're playing the Commanders next week and you'll be a King of the Beach. I'm like, I'm not playing. Tommy, we'll see that. I'll do some more research. But yeah, I do. I think Justin Fields is definitely in play. I, you know, like the idea of maybe a pairing of Justin Fields with Amon-Ra St. Brown, you know, just because that's maybe getting the receptions and passing yards that Fields won't get. But I could see both players putting up a good amount of points in that game.
Yeah, I mean, Fields put up 140 rushing yards and two touchdowns against the Lions last year. Obviously, not the same Lions defense, but he's capable of putting up that type of game. You brought up Kyler Murray, I think another guy who very interesting this week. And you know, we already mentioned the teams with the high totals, the teams with 26 plus implied points, and how all but one of those teams just has like a 9 plus point spread. The only one that doesn't is Houston against Arizona. And so, you know, could that be a game where Houston is rolling against this Arizona defense, but then also Arizona is able to put up some points in response and kind of turn this into more of a back and forth affair than some of these other games might be. So, yeah, I mean, I think that in terms of the running quarterbacks, those two guys really stand out on this slate. And an interesting week at quarterback too, because, you know, not that the guys at the high ends can't hit, but it's like just fundamentally in terms of how teams attack, you know, the Panthers, how teams attack the Packers, like teams lean so run heavy against those teams. In fact, the Panthers, positive EPA per play allowed against the run. They're one of only four teams that you pick up positive expected points per rush attempt against them. And yet negative EPA allowed per pass attempt against the Panthers. So like, that's part of the reason why you see teams just lean so run heavy against them. So yeah, I mean, Herbert, Dak, Tua against the Raiders, another team that's really like really solid against the pass, really bad against the run. Not to say that Tua can't hit, but he's got this, what, his best game this year is 31 points. His second best game is 32, second best 31. And this is a spot where, you know, the matchup suits them better on the ground. Raiders probably can't keep pace. So it's kind of like these top four guys on DraftKings, Allen, Tua, Herbert, Dak, like you can make pretty strong cases against all of them in terms of them putting up like had to have it types of scores. And then, you know, you've got the Stroud, but then below that you've got Fields and you've got Sam Howell, my guy, you've got Brock Purdy, you've got Jordan Love, you've got Dorian Thompson Robinson, who I do think is actually interesting on the slate. You got Kyler Murray. So yeah, I mean, there's just, it's a really interesting quarterback week for sure.
So can I, you're saying that this might be the Tony Pollard week, like if the Carolina defense is one that you want to.
Well, I mean, it honestly might, you know, it's crazy. His expected fantasy points versus his actual fantasy points. It's nuts how out of whack that is. And it's not, you know, you look through his game logs with the carries and it's like 14 carries, 15 carries, but there's context added to all of those. It's not like he's, you know, Ricky Dowdle isn't getting, you know, he's not Kareem Hunt to Jerome Ford. He's not like out there getting 35-40% of the snaps and touches. It's just been a function of how these games have gone, where the Cowboys have been like way behind or way ahead. And so game flow has been wonky and Pollard sitting on the sidelines in the fourth quarter or whatever the case might be. Yeah, I mean, it is, if there's a week, you know, I had very little Pollard last week. And it wasn't that I didn't think he could hit. It was just like, I didn't think the chances were as good as the field was going to think. And this week, I think the chances are better than the field is going to think, especially after he burned people again last week. So, no, I mean, it very well could be Tony Pollard week.
Pollard's an interesting case. I had a ton of them last week. And it seemed like you saw the line, you saw the spread, you know, and the game total. And just seemed like, okay, like Dallas is going to get it out to an early lead. And then just lean on Tony Pollard, and it's finally the week. And it was not finally the week. Yeah, it was. He's a frustrating player because he's on the field, and Dallas is just not using him. Among other issues, it seems like they're just not using him in the red zone, but they're just scoring anyway. And so with like other teams, they don't use their best players. So like, just Atlanta pops into my head, right? That like people get upset because they're not like using the players we want them to use for fantasy scoring, and a lot of times they're like not putting up a ton of points anyway. And so the frustration is like somewhat justified. But with Dallas, like, what can you say? Like, Dak is just throwing touchdowns and they just don't need to run Tony Pollard.
Yeah, but I mean, Josh Jacobs leads the NFL with 22 carries inside the 10. Tony Pollard second with 21. It's just, yeah, he's just not getting it done. You know, he's got two touchdowns inside the 10. Jalen Hurts has 7. Christian McCaffrey has 6. Kenneth Walker has 6. David Montgomery has 5. Gus Edwards and Raheem Mostert both have 8. Like, on down the list. Like even the touches are there. It's just like the productivity, the efficiency is just, it's been pretty crazy because of, remember last year when it was like, you play Tony Pollard, he gets 14 touches and puts up 30 plus points. And then like the next week he's going to get 20 plus touches. So everybody plays when he puts up 30 plus points again. And now all of a sudden he's there, he's getting the touches, he's getting the workload, and it's not coming together. But yeah, there's a game where it's going to come together. I mean, this is the matchup where, you know, we've got 37 points from Raheem Mostert at like whatever it was, 35% ownership, but it was like, well, you still play him at 35% ownership in this matchup. I'm not that confident on Pollard, but I do think he's like a very, very interesting play this week.
Yeah, I think he's fitting for me better on FanDuel than on DraftKings. And so, yeah, I'm sure I'll end up using him, especially on FanDuel at 6,900. It's tough to go back there. Like it does, it's a good matchup, but it's tough to go back there. Actually, I want to circle back to the Arizona Houston game because that's a game that's like kind of showing up, you know, a lot of players in projections. And I think there's some injury questions there. I think Nico Collins and Noah Brown on the Texans side, but yeah, Kyler Murray looked good. Like CJ Stroud has looked fantastic. And I think that is one of the games with a higher point total and closer spread that it's easier to envision being a shootout. Do you see it as, you know, possibly being the same way?
Yeah, absolutely. You're flying for King of the Beach tomorrow. I'm flying for the holidays tomorrow. So I've had to, Friday, usually I put together my player grid. I do all my podcasts that day. So I've had to like kind of move everything forward a day this week. So that's actually one of only two games that I haven't written up my DFS interpretations for yet. And I waited because I wanted to see Thursday practice reports, but Nico Collins has said he's going to play, but then Noah Brown missed again on Thursday. Damian Pierce missed again on Thursday. And so that's going to kind of dictate things for me is how concentrated is this passing attack. But if it's this concentrated, especially against an Arizona team that's been really good against tight ends, not to say that Schultz can't hit, but Collins, Singletary, and Tank Dell end up being such central pieces of that offense. I really like that game environment. I really like that spot. The two games, like I'm likeliest to stack in terms of full games, are Bears and Lions and Arizona and Houston. So I think we're on the same page there. I do have actually some interesting notes I want to throw your way on the Bears and Lions game if we circle back around to that, but. No, very much. I see this like Texans and Arizona game being a game, and I haven't looked at optimizers or projections yet to see kind of how popular these guys will be. That kind of comes into my process tomorrow. But, just from like a standpoint of what is good on paper, those are really sharp places to look, I think.
Yeah, actually, I kind of skipped over Devin Singletary when I was talking about like things that broke last week. I mean, he had 150 yards. And his price really hasn't gone up as much as it should. It's gone up a little bit. I think he's like 4,700 on DraftKings last week. So like that 150 yards, at the running back position at 4,700 was actually kind of a slate breaker. And now he's only 5,300. And it'll be interesting. I think Damian Pierce, yeah, did miss practice. So if Singletary is getting the start again, I mean, that's potentially a workhorse back you're getting in a very good offense. At 5,300, I guess, yeah, let's like circle back to the Lions Bears. Because that is a game that I have some interest in as well.
Yeah. So, do you remember when Matt Eberflus was with the Colts and the whole thing against their defense was like every single year you looked at the talent on the Colts defense, you were like, they're not really that good in the secondary, but they would be like one of the three worst matchups for wide receivers, year in and year out. And yet it was like, oh, attack them with pass catching running backs, attack them with tight ends. So this is kind of crazy. I don't think anyone's caught on to this. Maybe we shouldn't even talk about this publicly and put it out there. But since week two, when Mike Evans went for 170 yards against the Bears have not allowed a single wide receiver to top 65 yards against them. That includes Devontae Adams. That includes Keenan Allen. That includes Jordan Addison with Kirk Cousins and no Justin Jefferson. And there have been several other really good wide receivers they've faced in that stretch. And this is the same structurally, the same defense that, that the Colts had all those years where it was like, just don't play wide receivers against the Colts, play pass catching running backs, play tight ends. So it's a really interesting spot to me because I think that when people look at the top of the wide receiver range this week, the initial instinct is like, okay, Tyreek Hill's obviously interesting, but he's really expensive. People know that teams like to run the ball against Carolina. People know that the Jets are a tough matchup with Stephon Diggs. People probably don't want to pay 9K for Keenan Allen and, what could be a game the Chargers easily control against a team that tilts players towards the ground. And so I think that Amon-Ra St. Brown is the first guy that people see and they're like, oh, well, this is such an easy button to push. And so I kind of think that, and so the way I describe a situation like this is, like, if we played the slate 100 times, would he go for 30 plus points? Like, of course he would, but I just feel like the field is going to overrate how soft this matchup is and what a great spot it is and not understand like how good the Bears have been against wide receivers just based on the structure of their defense for, 2 months of the season. So I think it's a very interesting spot. And then it kind of makes me question, how do you attack the Lions, right? Because Jahmyr Gibbs at 7K, who, he might get five catches. So sure, they're it's a great spot for pass catching running backs, but is that enough? And so, yeah, just a really interesting spot for me with that Lions team, because the Lions team is part of what makes them good is that they can attack you with Jameson Williams, with Khalif Raymond, with Josh Reynolds, with Amon-Ra St. Brown, with Sam Laporta, with both running backs. So it's like, it could be one of those games where they score 30 points, but nobody really puts up a big fantasy score in terms of like against their salary. So yeah, just an interesting spot that I want to throw out there, because I think a lot of people will misread that as like an obvious smash spot, whereas really he has to overcome a setup that's not great for him through the air.
No, that's really good insight, because I like I said, the first thing I thought of was Amon-Ra St. Brown, right? Like, I mean, they have other wide receivers, especially on a price considered basis. You know, you want to be, you know, thinking about guys like Jameson Williams. But yeah, the primary guy you're going to think of is Amon-Ra St. Brown, but maybe it is. Maybe it's a Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, pass catching week when everybody else is thinking we don't know how things are going to be divided up among the running backs, or maybe, you know, Sam Laporta week. Hot takes. So do you have a hot take ready or?
No, why don't you? I'll throw a hot take out there. I'll say that I don't actually believe this, but this is makes it a mega hot take. I do think that these guys will overperform expectations. I'll say that Dorian Thompson-Robinson plus Amari Cooper is going to be a tournament-winning pairing this week. Again, I don't totally believe that, but I do think that we played out this thing 100 times. That would happen more times than people would expect.
Yeah, no, I like that kind of hot take, because it's an actual hot take. Like, and you're trying to be like directionally accurate, right?
I mean, it's plus EV. I think it's plus EV. And so we'll phrase it as a hot take, but just in terms of like how we actually think it is a plus EV way to go this week.
Interesting. I was going to ask, like, do you have any interest in anything from like from that game? Because it's one of the lower total games I can remember without like severe weather. Even with severe weather. It's one of the lower totals I've seen. But it's interesting that you think he's going to surprise. And I'm kind of curious why they're going back to like to Thompson Robinson. Because like PJ Walker, I guess it was Deshaun Watson, right, that led them to the win last week. But it seemed like PJ Walker was kind of the experienced guy brought in, and DTR is the rookie. But
the project. I mean, he's supposed to be, but PJ Walker is the lowest PFF grade among all NFL quarterbacks by like 20 points this year. Like one of the highest turnover worthy play rates. I mean, he's just been bad. And Dorian Thompson-Robinson looked awesome. He looked awesome enough in preseason that the Browns are like, all right, let's get rid of Josh Dobbs so we can keep Dorian Thompson-Robinson on the roster and develop him as our third guy. And obviously they would like to have Josh Dobbs on the roster right now, but DTR looked awesome in the preseason. He started on short notice against the Baltimore Ravens, you know, and it kind of got thrown to the wolves. Guy with rushing upside. Obviously, they're gonna lean on the run this week, so hard for them to rack up a lot through the air. But he's the kind of guy who could rush for 60 yards in this spot. And I think that kind of like the Will Levis first start, you see him and you're like, oh, this guy can actually hit. And you're like, oh no, that's dumb. That was like what I did Will Levis's first start. Then he goes out and puts up 26 points, and you kind of miss your chance to get on that. So am I gonna have a ton of DTR? No. Am I gonna be overweight the field? Yeah, because nobody's going to be on him. I'll have like 3% of them or something, 4% of them. But I do think that he would hit more than 3 or 4% of the time in this spot. I mean, by the way, Pittsburgh, they're like 11th in scoring defense, but like bottom five in yards allowed. I mean, that's their thing. They let you march the field and then hold you out in the red zone. But at DTR's price and with his rushing upside, if he's picking up yards, that's pretty good for you. And, you know, accounts for one rushing touchdown, all of a sudden, it's a pretty valuable piece.
I couldn't believe I was reading the write up on that game, and I couldn't believe Pittsburgh 6-3.
I know, right?
Like, this just does not seem like what their record is. But I mean, this stuff is written down somewhere, right? Like they are 6-3.
They are 6-3.
I couldn't believe that's their record. I think that's really interesting insight on Dorian Thompson-Robinson, because I thought about that game, right? And he's like 4,500 on DraftKings. Like that is absurdly cheap for starting quarterback. And I'd totally forgotten that the start that he had did come on like really short notice, where it was like Sunday morning and they were expecting it. I think Deshaun Watson maybe got hurt in warmups, or like, I think Watson was expected to play. And then suddenly he's like, no, he's not going to play. And it's just like, it didn't seem like they were preparing during the week at all for Thompson Robinson to play. And that it was against a Baltimore defense that were maybe now even more than looking at going, oh, this is like a very, very difficult defense to pass against.
And probably importantly, not just because they're talented, but because they're like, the Ravens are one of the most creative and confusing defenses in the NFL. Like, that's what makes them so tough. And so for a rookie thrown in into the fire, you know, not that Pittsburgh's a cakewalk, but it's like they're less of a matchup problem than the Ravens. And so, no, I mean, I just think it's obviously we're spending a lot of time on like a single entry show talking about DTR, but I do think that he's, for anybody who's like playing large field play, you know, take some shots on him, pair him with Elijah Moore or with Amari Cooper, or, you know, even with Jerome Ford, who I think is that's kind of the piece from this game that for like single entry play that I would actually have interest in is Jerome Ford.
Yeah. Actually, I think Jerome Ford could be in play as well, just in case they try to take some of the pressure off of Thompson Robinson. I guess for my hot take, I'll go with something a little bit more lukewarm. Just, I think Miami returns to their scoring ways. My other hot take, you know, from that was pretty good from earlier this year was that we should just play Miami the rest of the season when we have the opportunity. And I think it seems like it's been a while since they were on a main slate. I think it's just, you know, 2 weeks ago against Kansas City, and they didn't look that good. Like, they didn't put up their, you know, usual point total. But I'll say they returned to the scoring ways with 42 points against the Raiders.
I think
there'll be some useful fantasy pieces there. And, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, in terms of single entry, as I head to Miami, right? Like, thinking that the prices are too high and people, you know, are kind of glossing over them, right? Because it's not popping. A lot of people, so many more people are looking at projections now and like optimal lineups run using median projections now than they would have maybe 5-6 years ago. And the Miami guys aren't really popping in those lineups because there's no like mispricings. There's no injury news. It's like an NBA team where like everybody's just priced efficiently, but this isn't the NBA, right? Like in football, guys will score multiples of their median projection, which is not what you see in basketball generally. And so this could be the week that, you know, people aren't playing Tua. They're not playing Tyreek Hill. But I think Miami still has the highest implied point total on the board, which is, you know, something that's heavily correlated with fantasy production.
Yeah, and I mean, like, just to run through this real quickly, Devin Singletary's 5,300. He scored 30 points last week. Debo Samuel's 6,300. He has a 28-pointer this year. Amari, 62, obviously, now Deshaun Watson's out. But just to illustrate this, he has a pair of 27-pointers this year. Hopkins is 6,100, has a 37-pointer, 25-pointer. You go on down the list, right? Tank Dell, two games of 28-plus points. DJ Moore, 5,600, two games of 30-plus points. Like, you can play Tyreek Hill and he doesn't get you 45 and he still helps you win a tournament because like we can find guys, especially in this 5K price range at all positions, you even go over to tight end where Cole Kmet has a 23-pointer and 27-pointer at 4,100. Trey McBride has a pair of 24-plus point games at 4,400. So there's like really viable Noah Brown, 4,800, again, not looking likely to play, but 27 and 30 points these last two games. So I think that's also one of the traps that people fall into is like, well, you know, can Tyreek Hill actually score 4X? Can he actually score 38 points in this spot that Miami should dominate? It's like, well, who cares? Like, what if he doesn't, but he scores 32? And, you know, then that pushes you down to this price range. It's like, are all these wide receivers I just named, are they like materially lesser options than Adam Thielen against the Cowboys and Mike Evans against the 49ers and like Puka Nacua as a number two receiver now, DK Metcalf, who's topped 20.2 DraftKings points twice with Geno Smith. So it's like, I think that you can, if you remove salary from your thinking a little bit and just like, who are the players I'm getting on this roster? You know, Tyreek Hill actually matters, like makes a lot more sense up at that price tag. And like you said, I think the people will kind of gloss over him because of the price tag. So no, I like that call. Any thoughts on the running backs on Miami?
It's hard to parse out. I feel like Devin Achane's back. Jeff Wilson's back. I think Raheem Mostert is still there. So I think it's the first week we've got all three of those guys. And there's still Savan Ahmed, I think. I think he's still on the team.
And getting touches because they like him. Like, he's going to get those three, four touches a game.
So that's probably someplace I'm less likely to go just because it's hard to know. Like, those guys are all going to be expensive, I think. I haven't looked specifically at the pricing, you know, just based on their performance. So at least Achane and Mostert will be expensive.
Yeah, I mean, Achane is 6,600, Mostert 6,900. Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of how I see it is, you know, Mostert has what, two games of more than 13 carries. And I think it's how they want to run this offense, right? Like, it won't surprise me if Mostert sees 11 carries and Achane sees 9 or 10 and Ahmed sees 2 or 3 and Jeff Wilson sees 3 or 4, you know, and they just like, everybody kind of gets a turn on the field, gets a few touches, which doesn't mean that they can't hit, because they've shown that they can, but, and the matchup's great on the ground for them. But yeah, that's kind of a harder spot to pull the trigger on.
It is. I think, you know, especially like for single entry, it's hard to, if you're making one lineup or doing, you know, entering a single entry contest, to pick one of those guys, because it really could be, you know, three-headed thing. And you almost want to see with everybody back, how did things get divided up? But it could also be a tournament winning spot, right? Because maybe it's not split up. and maybe, you know, for Raheem Mostert, it's getting 3 touchdowns, which is definitely within the realm of possibility with the Miami offense. Then suddenly that's a piece that it would be very nice to have having tournaments. I'm thinking that maybe that just keeps ownership down on the Miami passing game, which is probably safer or easier to like to fit, if that makes sense. I mean, Tyreek Hill is obviously very expensive, but that won't necessarily be a game that a lot of people are trying to game stack, which could keep like Tua and Tyreek Hill's ownership down. But I mean, I would be surprised if I didn't have some of the Dolphins running backs in like my 150 field. And unlike most teams, I probably would not like exclude 2 running backs from the same team.
Yeah, that's a good call. Just hope you get those like 45 combined points between the two guys, and like you're sitting pretty with that. I mean, running back's interesting this week, especially, I don't know, you said you haven't really looked at pricing a ton on DraftKings yet, but like they've really adjusted. I mean, Josh Jacobs, 6,800, Derrick Henry, 6,300. So they're kind of giving you like a few more decisions to make too, in terms of, hey, do you really want to play Derrick Henry against Jacksonville? Probably not, but he's only 6,300, you know, like, do you really think Josh Jacobs can get 25 touches when the Raiders are traveling to play Miami? Probably not, but he's only 6,800, you know? So I think it's an interesting week at the running back position too. I mean, Saquon only 7,100. So yeah, a lot to play around with there for sure.
One more game I wanted to get your thoughts on, just because it's kind of a higher point total game with a closer spread. Seattle and the Rams. It looks like, I think Matthew Stafford, again, we're recording this on Thursday. We usually do Friday, right? As like injury reports are getting released. I think Matthew Stafford has a chance to play. Any thoughts on that game? Just because it's a game that might be relevant. Geno Smith is also pretty cheap on, especially on FanDuel.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a geographic thing, but like when Seattle plays in the late window, a lot of times people kind of just forget about that game. It's like, oh, it's up there in the northwest corner, hanging out up there with JM, and we're not thinking about that game. Yeah, I mean, that's a game that I look at and I'm like, this is a game that could shoot out, you know? So historically, these games between McVay and Carroll don't shoot out. They tend to be like these lower scoring divisional type games. And so, you know, that's part of the equation, I think, to think about. But in terms of what could happen, we play at the slate over and over again, there would be some shootouts in there. So yeah, that's a game that I haven't really built any practice builds around. And kind of what I marked down early in the week was, I marked down Sean Watson, who's now not playing, but Watson, Fields and Goff, Kyler and then Purdy, Howell. And then I just wrote down Rams and Seahawks, because it was like, who knows? You know, like, I don't actually want to go build a Geno Smith roster. I don't actually want to go build a Matt Stafford roster. But then you're like, if you're just picking a game that could actually, you look up and it's, oh my God, this was 31-37. That's one of those types of games. So yeah, like, I don't look at that game and find myself attracted to it, but it is one of those games that you understand, oh, this game actually could shoot out, and probably want to give myself some exposure to that. I can't imagine like shopping through my 150 rosters and finding one of those and being like, oh God, I got to put this in some single entry contests, but you could viably make that case. Yeah.
It's interesting. Like, Cooper Kupp's 8,100. I think it was like 9,000 or 90, even more.
Yeah.
You know, just about a month ago. And his first two games, it looked like, oh, wow, it's Cooper Kupp of all old. Like, he might be the highest scoring fantasy player right, from here on out. And then, you know, now he's kind of forgotten about. Like, it's still Cooper Kupp. Like, this is still a wide receiver that can give you 30 points, you know, at 8,000. So it's something to consider. That'll just about do it. Any final thoughts on the week?
Not on Thursday, man. I think we covered. I think we covered pretty good everything that I've got at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of my thoughts as well. This is a Thursday edition of the show. So yeah, make sure you're checking the injury report, and apologies if anything we said makes absolutely no sense to Friday, injury reports or practice reports. But yeah, that'll do it for week 11 of Soloship. Good luck to everybody. We'll see you next week.